Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive in the classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
Welcome to an all new episode of The Payoff. I'm Tom. That's Jeff. Jeff, how the hell are you doing?
Man, this is 140 plus episodes. It took us this long to finally get to this episode, which from day one, I have talked about the Inferno match, and I'm here for this. It's early. I had my coffee. I am ready to discuss this one.
Why are you so amped up to cover the Inferno match?
Well, I'll start with, I gave myself this match this week because I gave you a match next week that we'll get into. And so I wanted to kind of bless each of us with, you know, a match that, you know, we've talked about for a while, and it was time for us to do this one. This is one, it's so gimmicky to me. I'll be honest, I have not watched it in a very long time. And so I am excited to watch it again, because I don't think it's going to be good. And so, but that's okay. I think the gimmick is crazy. Like just how they do it, like how it's set up, like it makes no sense in the greater scheme of things. And I don't care. This is one of those wrestling things where it is the pure entertainment of it. Like, I'm just looking forward to that, because like you and I talked a lot about, like, you know, being at WrestleMania versus what the product looks like on TV and how it's built for TV. I feel like this is a match that, like, it's built for TV. Like, it's just so weird and out there. But to me, you can hear it. I'm just excited about it.
Well, I'm excited because of your level of excitement.
There you go, man. And we got good stuff happening the next 2 weeks. Every week we got the good stuff happening, but these 2 weeks especially, I've been looking forward to it.
All right, well, let's get into the build.
Oh, it's time for the build.
April 26, 1998. This is an Unforgiven show. The In Your House tagline is still kind of around, but not really. Obviously, that was on its way out. We're in Greensboro, North Carolina, the Greensboro Coliseum. 21,000 in attendance, a buy rate of 300,000. So, man, this is, the product was hot. There was no question about that. In terms of the card, we start off with Farooq, Ken Shamrock, and Steve Blackman defeating The Nation, which was The Rock, D'Lo Brown, and Mark Henry. So Farooq no longer part of The Nation. And I actually thought they could have kept him in there longer. But
who's good? Yeah, I liked him. Yeah.
I did too. And I liked The Nation, but, you know, obviously we had to get Rock over as a heel, and man, did that work. Triple H is going to retain his European championship in 12 minutes against Owen Hart. The Midnight Express, accompanied by Jim Cornette, would defeat the Rockin' Roll Express. It's interesting because there's so much history and story there, but no one cared. And, you know, they tried doing some different NWA related stuff in 1997. I just remember just really not caring. I didn't know the history because I didn't live in North Carolina, you know, It was just tough. Luna is going to defeat Sable in a 3-minute evening gown match. Then we get the New Age Outlaws, who would retain their tag team championships against LOD 2000, who are accompanied by Sonny. So it's interesting on, have you listened to Road Dogg's new podcast yet?
I have not. No.
Okay. It's good. I mean, I I'm not going to listen to every episode, but I think on some of the topics, it is kind of interesting. But, you know, the Road Dogg and Billy Gunn, I mean, it's probably isn't shocking, but it's still interesting to hear. I mean, they really got thrown together. There really was no plan. Next thing you know, these guys are part of DX. They're working against Terry Funk and Mick Foley, They're working against LOD. They're getting over. I mean, it's just, it was wild how quickly that happened. Semi-main event is this, what we're covering. And then the main event was Dude Love defeating Stone Cold Steve Austin by DQ. Now, obviously we know that they'd go on to have another match that was better. But yeah, they had those two working together. It's just, it's crazy to think, and I'm not saying there's an obvious answer as to who it should have been, but as over as Steve Austin was then, it's just crazy that they really didn't have anyone else for him to go up against. You know, I mean, who's he supposed to be defending his title against right now coming off of WrestleMania? I mean, and then I guess you could make the argument, who cares? It doesn't matter. You can basically put him with anyone. But, you know, they struggled to have, you know, big time opponents for him to go up against. Even as evidenced by, you know, them going with like a face first face at SummerSlam with Undertaker. So they really struggled there. Not well reviewed matches really outside of the main event, which was a 4-star match. And again, they worked well together. So storyline standpoint, and obviously there's a lot of moving pieces here. How did we get to this Inferno match?
Yeah, so it's all kind of boils back down to, or back to, if you will, like kind of Kane and where he came from in the storyline. And so, like we said, this, you know, this was In Your House, technically In Your House 21, Unforgiven, but it was titled just Unforgiven In Your House at this time. They weren't using the numbers, just kind of, you know, looking back on it. So again, this was April, the end of April 1998, but we got to go back to when he debuted, really not that long prior to this, in October of 1997. As we all know, the match we've covered, the Shawn Michaels match and Undertaker, Bad Blood In Your House, where you had Kane, you know, debuting during that match and kind of dealing with that. So, these guys, they ended up having a casket match at Royal Rumble, where again, you had Kane at that time interfering with that one. And this was where you had the Undertaker in the casket, it being locked, and then being set on fire, as we all know, kind of setting the Undertaker ablaze at that point, and I guess, you know, killing him however angle you want to take it. So, a lot of this was, of course, the storyline build with Kane and kind of Paul Bearer being with him, of how, you know, the Undertaker setting the house on fire and burning Kane. And so this is why he had this affinity toward fire, as we all know. And that's kind of, you know, what the storyline piece of this. And so it kind of working through that. And this was, we talked a little bit about this in different episodes of The Payoff, but how, you know, he went and got his approval, or excuse me, the Undertaker went to the afterlife, got the approval of his parents to fight his brother. Of course, again, just crazy storyline, but this is what we were all about in 97-98 in doing that. And then really the match coming from the Undertaker fighting the Kane, eventually giving a bunch of tombstone pile drivers, and then saying that, okay, they were going to have this match because of all the storyline background that Kane was in the fire, and that the first person to be set on fire would lose the match. And so, you had a lot of this playing into it. So you had the match that was established, but then the next week you had Paul Bearer and Kane, and then actually at the graves of the Undertaker, and then smashing the headstones, which I remember that is just like a crazy iconic, like, you know, doing that and kind of building the story, which I don't know how you would ever get away with that nowadays, but at the time that was how it was. And so, and then, of course, you know, just really a lot of back and forth between these guys and, you know, choke slamming, tombstones, the fire, like it, with the debut. Like, I remember thinking at the time, like, it is like supernatural as some of this was and as crazy it was, like, I wanted to watch the Undertaker and Kane and what was happening, because it was such a cool storyline with the brother. And of course, at the time, like, you know, 90, I didn't know, like, you know, we didn't have as much internet access back then of, like, you know, they weren't real brothers, but I didn't care. Like, that was, at that point, there was really good storyline for me. And like, Kane was legitimately, like, I remember Undertaker, we've said it before, Undertaker scaring the crap out out of me growing up. But Kane was like legitimately terrifying. Is like they made him a great kind of heel to the Undertaker, of like someone that could actually challenge him and kind of come at him. And so and like we said, so then we get into the Inferno match, and it's the first person that is set on fire. So I got a little history on Inferno matches, but we'll get into that during the match and kind of what's happening here. And so only a few of them in the history of WWE, but we'll talk about them.
Yeah. I know there's a couple others and I don't remember them offhand, but I have a feeling you're going to educate us, which I look forward to. Let's get into this one. I don't think it's going to be a five-star classic, but I think it's going to be a fun one to watch, for the spectacle. And I do think that we're going to cover a lot of ground here. I've got some cool notes to talk about as well. So, Jeff, are you ready?
I'm ready, man.
Okay. We're at the hour 49 mark of Unforgiven. Hour 49 mark. It's actually season one, episode one of Forgiven. So hour 49. Jeff, are you ready?
Let's do it.
All right. It's time for the payoff.
Oh, it's time for the payoff.
How do you like your Undertaker? Regular or extra crispy? It's not great even line. Funny.
All right.
This ring can be up to 200.
All right. Okay. So,
yep.
Kane already in the ring. Taker coming in. Slow, methodical. Love the ring gear there. This storyline, was it too hokey for you, or was it just?
I remember at the time thinking, like, looking back on it, yeah, absolutely. But at the time, like, no. Like, it was, I didn't care. Like, I just, again, it was just cool to me. So the surrounding of the ring kind of has these like gas pipings, if you will. And it's starting to be, so the fire is kind of working its way around the ring at this point with these kind of gas contraptions, if you will. Now, I did do a little bit of digging here. I did as well. This was the first WWE Inferno match. The Inferno match itself was not something that was new to wrestling. And so, like I said, this is 1998, but from what I could tell, and I could not find who were the participants, but it was actually 1987 in Puerto Rico was the first Inferno match. Now, I know we've seen on Dark Side of the Ring, there were some different matches where this happened as well too, but in that match in 1987, instead of kind of having this contraption, if you will, that has the fire around the ring, the big difference in that one is they just set the ropes on fire. Like, and so, that was all that was going on in that one. And so now this one, obviously a little different, just the kind of look and obviously safety of the wrestlers. You can't do what you would normally do if the ropes were just on fire. Granted, I'm sure some wrestlers would, but not all of them. So,
this just seems a little risky to try to pull off.
Yeah.
And
now,
then they do the thing where they jack up the fire and it goes there, it even is, higher. Yeah. I mean, look at, like, if you look to the right now, like that, just, the fire is kind of going closer to the ring. I mean, I'm just surprised that nothing like caught on fire. I don't know. I mean, I'm guessing maybe they put something on the ropes that would like prevent it from like some type of, I don't know, like a Vaseline or something.
They'd have to. Yeah. Cause you figure like normally it's wrapped in the tape would catch fire. You would think.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It is interesting too. Like I even on the left side too, you can see where the flames are kind of like whether there's a breeze in there, the air conditioning or whatever, it's kind of blowing it toward the ring, which is an interesting kind of look. And so there have been, four, five, if you count the Bray Wyatt, Randy Orton match, which I'm not. And so, but Kane has been involved in all of the Inferno matches, four of them, getting a record of 1-2 or 1-3.
My guess as to why he's 1-3 is just because it brings back some really tough memories.
It's gotta absolutely, yeah. You know, figure, you know, I can't look forward to this match. I'm sure, you know, him and the therapist having some good conversations about this, but, the first two, of course, being these guys, with this match taking place at Unforgiven. The next one, weird to think too, like they got this match. It was actually on a Raw in like random Raw in Tennessee, where the Undertaker beating the Kane, and it was actually, just under 7 minutes. The one after this, it was actually on a SmackDown, and it was Triple H and Kane in 1999 as well. Big year for the Inferno match in 1999, with Triple H defeating Kane, actually getting his hand set on fire at that time. So Kane has had, well, I won't spoil the end of this one for you, but he's had his foot set on fire, his hand set on fire, and then something else in this match that we will see later. His win, actually, and I had forgotten this match. I did not go back and kind of check it out, but I need to. I did not put it on our list, but Kane beating MVP actually in about 8.5 minutes. This was at Armageddon 2006. And so I did not remember that match at all, but good for him finally overcoming his match stipulation. So, but I will be honest, since 2006, I'm glad this match has not made its return. Like you said, whether it's the safety or just kind of things like that, but we've heard it, like the Undertaker himself has said it too. I think it was on The Last Ride, actually, that a big problem with this match is, yeah, obviously the heat, and you're kind of dealing with that and things like that. But also, like, it's incredibly hard to breathe in the ring because they are just burning the oxygen around the ring. And so it's twice as hard to kind of have the match and kind of stay gassed. And so, like, little spoiler, like, this match runs just short of like 16 minutes. That's a long time. You figure with, you know, the, you know, having trouble breathing and things like that. And they're not, like you said, the flames aren't staying stable. Like, they're kind of, you know, shooting them up a little bit here with, like, now they're doing a little bit more with every move almost. Like, you figure, like, I would almost think it's like getting the wind like knocked out of you, you know, every 30 seconds. Like, it's gotta be tough.
Yeah. And if they had some bigger guys, some smaller guys that they could just bump outside the ring, but yeah, they're kind of trapped in there too.
Mm-hmm. So now we got a steel chair, Paul Bearer kind of tossing the chair to Kane, kind of Undertaker taking an unprotected headshot. Like, oh, yep.
It's just kind of hard to believe. I mean, Kane had a 20-year run. Because his final matches were in 2018. I mean, he came back for the Rumble in 21, but, you know, his final matches, which actually his final like regular match was the Saudi Arabia DX, which, God, that just, it's so disappointing, but that match just absolutely sucked. I mean, four veterans in there. I mean, I think if you had some younger guys in there, I mean, you saw what, you know, even Steve Austin was able to do with Kevin Owens. I think that's more the blueprint, right? You don't want to see Goldberg and Taker, but Goldberg and Lashley was actually pretty damn good, especially their final match. And, you know, Taker can obviously work with AJ. It's just, you can't put two older guys in there that can't bump or, you know, or can't really do a lot. So, but if you mix it up, I think you're perfectly fine. So, what is the highest rated Kane match of all time?
Oh, I do not know, actually. I'm actually interested in this list. I hope you have a few of these because I don't know.
Well, so it's interesting. There's a ton of Kane matches that, you know, 4 stars and above. They're all like multi-man matches. So there's not a one-on-one match, but there was a Survivor Series match from 2001. There was a Money in the Bank match. There was a TLC match when he was tagging with Daniel Bryan. Another Survivor Series match. Another Table, Ladders, and Chairs. These are all like 4.5, 4.25-star matches. One of the Elimination Chamber matches. The first one that Shawn Michaels won. Elimination Chamber, another Tables, Ladders, and Chairs match, another Elimination Chamber match. So all these multi-man matches, his highest one-on-one match. We're gonna have to keep scrolling.
Say, is it even on the list here? Yeah. Like, this,
these are all multi, I'm telling you. Okay. His highest ever was a match versus Chris Benoit.
Interesting. From where?
Three and a half stars. And it was, I think it was just a Raw.
Wow. See, and that's great. Like, which, did you see the most recent picture of Glenn Jacobs too? That's floating around the internet.
And so, yeah, he's jacked.
DDP yoga, man. That's what he gives credit to. Like I former, you know, I don't do it like I used to, but I fan myself. And so unofficial plug there. So, yeah, dude, I'm almost wondering like, is he about to have a run? Like, is he about to do, I know you're not a run, but is he getting ring ready for Saudi Arabia again? Like, who knows? Like you figure, you know, probably pay him like 250 just to go over there and do.
Well, and you know, I know the DX match. I mean, he donated that all to, I think it was the local firefighters.
Yes.
His entire chat, which is pretty cool. I think same with his Royal Rumble appearance, which I think that's great. So, Taker's new podcast. Is there anyone that you're really excited to have on there?
I would think to be honest, who is, the Godfather, oddly enough, I feel like I've learned through some of these behind the scenes stuff that you and I've watched that the two of them spent a lot of time on the road together. They have a lot of stories together that they, and so you wouldn't think I feel like that's not a sexy pick, but I feel like the stories that those two guys can tell will be absolutely incredible. And kind of getting into what happened. And so, you know, I wish like Yokozuna was still around because I feel like, you know, looking back at some of those old photos from the 90s of those guys, you know, sitting in the hotels and the bars, like kind of drinking. Yeah. Who was in those photos? There's so many of those guys. Like Kane would be someone that, yeah, absolutely bring him back. Like, let's kind of see it going for the choke slam now and the fire going crazy. It's cool.
Cool, I mean, visual. It's just, yeah. When it's just wild, but I mean, it's just wild to think about. I mean, there are so many people. I think Taker with almost anyone would be an interesting podcast, but you know, you think, oh, well, Sean and Flair and Austin and hell, if they could get Vince McMahon on there or even Shane McMahon and, you know, Glenn Jacobs would be a good one. Maybe even like AJ Styles to talk about, you know, that final match. And could you get like a Bruce Pritchard on? I mean, you just go through the list. It's like, who would you not want to watch The Undertaker have an hour long conversation with? So I don't think you have to overthink it. I think the Steve Austin blueprint is, you know, perfectly fine. Just two guys shooting the shit, maybe throwing a few back and, you know, just a really good kind of raw conversation. But I think those Austin ones, I think I've watched every single one. There hasn't been a bad one. They're just great conversations. I think it's not easy to interview people. And Steve Austin's just awesome.
Yeah. You and I know that, like, we're just interacting with people in that way. It's just difficult. Yeah. And so, but I'm fine with them. What I feel like they're doing one a month with Austin, which you figure, yeah, it's probably a day long for him, but also like,
oh yeah,
that's not a difficult schedule. Like, but you know, they bring him in, so it's a little bit different. And then they spend the day, you know, you figure, you know, while we're seeing what, you know, 2, 3, maybe 4 hours of them talking, like there's a whole lot more content that's getting filmed and things like that. So yeah. And you're right. Like, it's not easy for everyone to kind of do this. And so that's the other thing too. I hope like Undertaker has good rapport with some of these people. I'm sure he will, you know, and then, you know, the writers and things like that, I'm sure he will be fine. In that sense. But yeah, and there's a lot of people, I think too, like even like you said, the McMahons, like even like Stephanie, I saw a clip from her just the other day and they were talking about like her and Andre and how they got along when she was growing, like literally a kid. And so, you know, there's so many of those like kind of wrestling stories that you and I like, that's what we, like, I think you and I are at the point in our wrestling kind of, you know, love that, like, we want to hear that stuff. Like, that is the stuff that connects us to wrestling, which that is a point. Like, AEW doesn't have that necessarily. And yeah, they could talk about the indies. They could talk about like, you know, the history of Sting and things like that, but they don't have some of this built in, you know, some of the wrestlers and be able to tell some of those stories like AEW, like they just can't. And so give us more of that.
You and I, we don't script out what we're going to talk about in these shows, but you just gave me a great segue into one of the things I want to discuss. And by the way, Taker just dumped Kane over the top rope, very big bump. You forget how athletic Kane was in this era. And I think we may have a dive from Taker coming the outside of the ring, which is going to be pretty spectacular.
Maybe not. Joe Briscoe was sitting at the timekeeper's table too, which Paul Bearer is now accosting him. And so, yeah, telling him to ring the bell. Yep. And get the flames higher. So, yeah.
So Taker trying to get outside the ring. Kane is outside the ring. But again, Kane was just so good. And so, here comes Vader.
So Vader attacking Kane from behind as Kane was about halfway up the entrance ramp. And Vader just kind of punching Kane. Yeah.
Yeah, love Vader, but this was, you know, again, this was just past his physical prime, so it wasn't able to do what we, you know, would have wanted. But okay, here comes Taker. Dive to the outside. Awesome. Yeah. No, but what I, you know, so it's been said a lot recently, and just obviously there's a lot of critiques of AEW, not that there's not critiques of everything right now. But I will tell you, and I wanted to bring it up in this match just because of the over the top storytelling of, you know, Kane and the Undertaker, but tell me, agree, disagree, but here's my perspective. You know, AEW, I mean, there's not a whole lot of storytelling there. It's mostly just, hey, these guys are really good wrestlers and they're going to have a great match. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if that's all you're doing and you're not telling stories, they don't have to be this over the top, but to grow your fan base, people need to be invested in the characters and in the storylines. And I do think it's tough. I mean, I watch an AEW pay-per-view and I'm like, okay, these are going to be some great matches, but I'm not like super invested in all the characters and all the stories because there's not a lot. And here's my theory on that. And then I'll shut up and I want your thoughts on it. You know, Tony Khan, he is the writer. Okay. What's missing is collaboration. Now, should WWE have 30 writers? Is that the best format? Probably not, but one person without being able to collaborate with a team of people, I think you miss a lot. And I think the old, you know, Bruce Pritchard and Pat Patterson and Vince McMahon sitting behind Vince's or, you know, backyard by the pool, shooting the shit and, you know, getting organized on storylines and bouncing ideas off of each other. That's a creative process. And so I think that, you know, at some point Tony needs to have a few people that he can collaborate with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I feel like maybe we're starting to see this. So they're fighting outside of the ring at this point too. Paul Bearer just got his head put through a drum, because the DX band was set up out there. Yeah. I think you're right. I think there is a middle ground here. I wonder how much like behind the scenes input, like Regal has and things like that. It would be interesting to hear that. If he is, you know, helping with some of the booking. Tony Khan has always kind of said like he is in charge of the booking, like that is falling on him. And so, yeah, I think then on the flip side, you get into this like WWE stuff where you've got writers and things like that, where you've got so many people, but like all of a sudden they don't have anything to write for someone. Like that just seems crazy to me. Like even like Alexa Bliss, like she has said, like, you know, they can't find a way to bring her back. And so, you know, kind of dealing with that, and it's just kind of, you know, that part of it's crazy. I don't know. I do agree with you. I don't know where the middle ground is though. And this is, you and me armchairing this type of stuff. Like you and I could not show up tomorrow and start booking wrestling effectively. Like,
I think the middle ground's a small team of writers.
Yeah. Yeah. And so,
I mean, you could have one person in charge. Okay. Tony can be in charge. I think you need two or three other people just to collaborate with that, you know, you have a really good relationship with.
Oh, here we go.
So Kane's right arm is on fire.
In flames. So all this Undertaker Paul Bearer brawling, allowed Kane time to put the protective sleeve on as he's now running up the ramp with his arm on fire. Kind of a mellow crowd reaction there. I don't think they realized what was going to happen. Okay. So put your bow on it. Yes.
The look on Taker's face is, hey, this sucked.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. It was a spectacle.
Yeah, it was. It was cool to see it, but like you said, it was not a 5-star by any. I think, yeah, we'll get into our scores, but yeah. So,
all right, let's get into the aftermath.
Right.
Oh, it's time for the aftermath.
All right. So, initial thoughts.
It was fine. You know, yeah. I'm not.
Wasn't like bad.
Said, no, it was. I will give it credit for. It was actually it was better than I expected, but it was still not good. Like, you know, or it's still not, you know, it's not going to be, you know, the most unforgettable type thing, but like right now it's really cool. We still got it on. Like now that it was a red light, now it's a blue light with the flames kind of still around the ring and stuff like that. So again, it's all the visual of it. You're going to remember that, which is cool. So yeah, it was,
yeah.
I wanted to cover it. I'm glad we did. Yep.
No, I feel the same way. Well, it definitely wasn't bad. I mean, it wasn't a great match, but you're not, I mean, even there's no match between these two that's going to be great, right? I mean, it's just they're two big guys, and it was more about the story and the spectacle, and you know, yep. Semi-main event, great, Taker wins. You know, the only thing that was, I think, challenging was, you know, that's now, Kane's now lost, you know, both these matches versus The Undertaker. I know this one was a little, you know, goofy, yeah. But I still, at the time, they were not thinking, hey, this is a character we need to protect because he's going to be with us for the next 20 years, right? I mean, they thought, hey, this guy will be, you know, gone by SummerSlam. It's just another big guy to bring in for Taker to feud with. Who would have ever thought that, you know, the character would have the longevity? But yeah, you know, I think it's, I mean, obviously it's a cool character, but I think it's a testament to Glenn Jacobs. I mean, by all indications, just a great human being, hard worker, good guy. I think people just liked him, and they said, you know, we gotta keep finding a role for this guy. And they did. The character evolved over time. Wasn't always great, but
you got to wonder that, like we were just talking, like that creative meeting, like, yep, we need you to set yourself on fire. And he was just like, yep. Okay. Like, yeah. You know, that would be an interesting story to hear of this. Like, hey, like, how do you get him from point? Like, dude, you used to be a crazy dentist, and now we need you to set yourself on fire for this character. Like, again, it speaks to, you know, just reinventing yourself and being willing to kind of go out there. And, the replay shot, they showed Undertaker diving over the ropes and Undertaker Kane on fire. So like that you it achieved what you wanted it to achieve, no matter how good or bad the match was. Cause now you can show those highlights forever, and that's it. You're good to go. So,
yep.
But okay. So what kind of aftermath on this one? Like we said, of course you had Vader coming out, you had Paul Bearer and Undertaker kind of distracting as Kane, you know, was kind of getting his setup with the protective sleeve and stuff like that. But Kane. And so again, just after this, they over the edge in your house, Kane actually defeated Vader in a mask versus mask match. And so that kind of carried over from this one and kind of how that happened. Then you also had just a few weeks after that, June 1st on Raw, actually Kane beating The Undertaker on that one to become the number one contender for the championship. And then you had the King of the Ring, then Kane actually beating Stone Cold. It was a first blood match. We have that one on our list. You had interference from Mankind, The Undertaker, but he actually winning the WWF championship at that King of the Ring, but then losing it the next night back to Austin on Raw. And so again, fairly, I mean, even if it was a night, they very quickly, this guy, Kane, big storylines with big people. Vader was still big, you know, whether, you know, no matter how he was looking, like he was still, you know, big name, he had Taker, Mankind, Austin, like he was at the heart of it at this point. So, But unfortunately, or interestingly enough, like Undertaker as well too, at that King of the Ring as well. Well, you know, we forget about that was Kane's, you know, winning the championship over Austin, because that King of the Ring, unforgettable with the Hell in a Cell versus Mankind versus Undertaker match. And so we all know how that played out, kind of throwing him off the top and everything like that. And so just hard to, you know, even if, you know, Kane's moment, I say overshadowed in so many ways because of that and how that happened, there's no way you're gonna, you know, you're not gonna float past that. So that's just not gonna happen. And so but then again, these guys all kind of working together, so it's fully loaded in your house. You had The Undertaker and Stone Cold beating Kane and Mankind actually to win the tag team championships. It was short, it was only 2 weeks, but you had Kane and Mankind actually winning them back. It was a four-way tag match on an August Raw. And so they kind of having that. So yeah, just, you know, interesting stuff. Eventually this would get into Undertaker kind of teaming up, or, you know, being a part of McMahon, working with McMahon to get rid of Austin. And so definitely interesting stuff coming out after this one. This was, I'd say, the pinnacle of some of the McMahon stuff and how involved some of these guys were with that, but good stuff all around. So PWI on this one, Undertaker had a 5 for that year. Kane was number 21. And so these guys, again, very top of the hill, if you're looking at it. it. So, it's, you know, and this one, again, it, like I said, the ratings were kind of all over the board on this one. You know, the ring was surrounded, or this is the torch, PW torch. The ring was surrounded by basically a gas stove contraption, a bar that went around all four sides of the ring at about the level of the bottom rope with holes in that shot off natural gas, which lit on fire, created a framework of fire that looked visually striking. During the Undertaker Bearer fight, Kane's arm was covered with something protected before it was set on fire. Good storyline to the match, decent action. They gave it 2.75 stars. Meltzer on this one, while this wasn't the first ring surrounded by fire match, it differed from the previous ones in that they put cloth on the ropes and used gasoline to start the flames, making those matches considerably more dangerous in Puerto Rico, as had been done. But this was held in an indoor building, and the special effects in those matches were primitive in comparison. Again, with the exception of one spectacular dive out of the ring by Undertaker, this wasn't much of a wrestling match, but it was an interesting spectacle to watch two guys not doing much of anything in a ring surrounded by flames. The fans reacted more to the flames going up and down than the moves of the match. Kind of ECW style, and that there was a lot of bad wrestling, but the well set up being big spots of the match gave things to make the match memorable. Also, 2.75 stars. So 2.75, 2.75. Tom, you want to go first? Do you want me to go first? What do you want to do?
I'll go first. So, you know, I'm going to throw this thing at a 5.
Nope.
It wasn't terrible. It wasn't, you know, great. I mean, it was fine. I mean, it was, there's some story and some spectacle there. But certainly not something that, you know, I would rank any higher than a 5. What about you?
I am right at a 5. I actually had this thought, like, as the match was going, I was like, you know what? There was a lot that, you know, it was almost like overshadowed by what it was wedged between, because the Kane debut was such a big deal and how they built to it. And then after this, you have the Undertaker and the Hell in a Cell match, like, you know, with Mankind. And so it's almost like crazy. Like, this match, it was a stepping stone match, which seems crazy because of what it was and the gimmick. And, you know, it was cool though. And so, you know, hard to overlook that, but yeah, again, like he said, I agree with Meltzer on it. Like, there was not a ton of wrestling. Yeah, there was some kind of, you know, back and forth a little bit, and, you know, occasional choke slam, but, you know, the wrestling itself. But yeah, again, weird calling it a stepping stone match, but I feel like that's the best way I can describe it, and that's what we're going to go with.
All right. Well, that's it. You got your Inferno match.
I got my Inferno match, but you, buddy, get your match next week, which I know you're excited about. And so,
Shawn Michaels, Marty Jannetty.
Yes. And so we are finally covering it for time. We've talked about it for long enough. And so, we want to make sure, and for all of you at home, don't forget, of course, I got my match this week. Tom gets his match next week. But for all of you every week, don't forget, go to manscaped.com, use that promo code payoff20, anything in the store, anything you put in your cart, it's going to give you 20% off and free shipping. And so that's payoff20. Make sure to use that code at manscaped.com, because hey, this week, like I said, this week's for me, next week's for Tom, but we want you guys to feel good every week. And so payoff20 at manscaped.com.
All right. We'll see you next week on an all new episode of The Payoff.